The Britzker Rav, Reb Zalvel, was sitting among a chevra of frequent visitors, and they were talking about the mother yeshiva, the yeshiva of Elojin. She was called, by the way, had the name Eitz Chaim, it was the name of the yeshiva. And the Britzker Rav among in the middle of the discussion, he actually mentions that he says, regarding the Yeshiva of Elojin, he says, as we know that after a number of years, the Yeshiva of Elojin had to close because of government issues. And the Britzker Rav saw it like, very coldly, he said, Yeshiva of Elojin closed, he says, because it had to close. People around him were sort of like surprised what he meant when he said, Yeshiva of Elojin closed because it had to close. It was known that by Reb Zalvel Britzker, Yeshiva of Elojin, the closing of Yeshiva Elojin, to him it was like a churban beis hamikdash. And here he says, well, Yeshiva Elojin had to close because it had to close. And Reb Zalvel realized the surprise on the faces of the people listening, and Reb Zalvel goes along and he says the following. He says, when my grandfather, Reb Chaim Elojin, when he founded the yeshiva, and usually when you have a groundbreaking is accompanied by a tremendous celebration of Simcha. And interesting, whoever observed Reb Chaim Elojin at the time, instead of having sort of like a happy demeanor about himself and so on like all the other people, him on the contrary, one would see that he was in a very somber mood with tears coming from his eyes, he was actually sobbing and he was crying. And it was later on, it was related that Reb Chaim Elojin had a discussion with a different Rosh Yeshiva who asked why Reb Chaim was so matlich. Yeshiva Elojin had tremendous hatzlach and success, years and years. It actually was the foundation of other yeshivas. And Reb Chaim says, he says to this other Rosh Yeshiva, he says, tell me, how did you found the yeshiva? How did you do the groundbreaking? So of course he said, they usually with pomp and simcha and so on and so forth. And Reb Chaim says, by me it was just the opposite. He says, when you build a yeshiva, he says, and you lay a number of bricks, he says, a yeshiva is not built, he says, with sand and water to make the cement, but he says it's with sand and tears. That's the kind of cement of how you build a yeshiva. Which means that you have to have tremendous devotion and tefillah to Kodesh Baruch Hu to be matzliach in this endeavor of Rabot HaSatayra. So therefore, this is what it was said. It was said by Reb Chaim that his bricks did not need any water to be mixed with the sand in order to produce the cement, but rather it was his tears, the tears of Reb Chaim. And Reb Zalvel Britzker went on to say that in fact it was those tears that guaranteed that many, many yeshivas of Lithuania, which sprouted, of course, came forth by the great, great Talmidim and Talmidim of those Talmidim. So when he said that Yeshiva Elojin had to close, basically it closed, but it really never really closed. It closed physically, maybe it closed. But the truth is that the Torah of that yeshiva continued to flourish on and on, and many, many structures of Torah flourished and grew as a result of that yeshiva's Elojin. It became literally the mother yeshiva to many, many other yeshivas. There's another very interesting incident. Reb Chaim Elojin, when he spoke about his Rebbe, the Goyin, the Vilna Goyin, and this is found in the Hagdamah to the Sefer Safra Ditzniyusa of the Goyin. Reb Chaim Elojin writes there in the Hagdamah that he once had a discussion with his Rebbe, the Goyin, the Vilna Goyin, regarding the Cheshivas, the importance of Tefillah. And he said that the Goyin, the Beferish, told me that he's been a Shemayim. They actually sent me a message from a Shemayim to realize and to recognize the importance of Tefillah. And that is, the Goyin said it was a particular Maimer in the Zohar HaKadosh that I, the Goyin, can say himself the Goyin, he himself had tremendous difficulty in understanding that particular piece of Zohar. And he says that it was regarding an inyan of Rish Chodesh. It was a Zohar regarding an inyan of Rish Chodesh. The Zohar Kodesh discusses an inyan of Rish Chodesh. And I worked on it, he says, 12 weeks. This is what Reb Chaim Elojin says that the Goyin told him personally. It was such a difficult passage that as much as he tried, he worked on that particular passage of the Zohar 12 weeks. And still he did not find a satisfactory pshat in understanding that particular Maimer of the Zohar. And he says, and lo and behold, on a particular Rish Chodesh, a while later, it was Rish Chodesh, while I'm standing in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, Shacharis. Shacharis is Chaydish in the middle of the Shemayin Esrei. And all of a sudden, in one moment, all of a sudden, during Shemayin Esrei, seven different Perushim of that Zohar come into my mind. The only problem is that in the middle of davening, you're supposed to be davening. When you're davening, you're not supposed to be thinking and learning. Sometimes that's a tremendous challenge. Some people have other challenges. Think of that business, thinking about, oh, okay, things come into my mind. Davening is supposed to be davening, but even learning. Even learning has no place during the time of davening. Zman Torah lechud, Zman Tefillah lechud. Gemara says that, number of places. And here, lo and behold, it's very difficult. Pshat in the Zohar HaKadosh that he worked for 12 weeks, and all of a sudden, he says, the last place you'd expect that's going to fall into his head, without any warning, pshat in the Zohar HaKadosh, and not one pshat. He says, seven different perushim. And I didn't know what to do, says the Goyim. I didn't know what to do. So Reb Chaim relates, Reb Chaim Volozhin writes, says, I told the Goyim, I said, listen, so maybe you stop for a moment from davening. Now, you can't daven and think. You shouldn't be doing that, davening and thinking about something else. But maybe you stop. Stop in the middle of the Shemayin Esrei, wherever you are, you know, at the end of a brocha. Before you begin further, stop for a few seconds. And in the middle, just think about, to be misadar in your mind, right? To be misadar in your mind, all of the thoughts that you have, to collect your thoughts. Is that a hefsek after all? To stop for a moment? Mamish, really, just a moment. And be misadar, all the thoughts that came into your mind for a moment. And the Goyim says, that's exactly what I did. Exactly what I did, he says, about, he says, a quarter of a minute, I stopped in the middle of davening, in order not to confuse the learning with the davening. So I stopped in the middle of the davening, middle of Shemayin Esrei, about a quarter of a minute, to be misadar my machshavah. Not more, he said, a quarter of a minute. And then I continued immediately davening. And guess what he says? After, when I finished davening, I again wanted to recall all that I was thinking about. I forgot them all. I forgot them all. There was not a trace of any of the seven perushim that I thought about during davening. He says, I pushed it, forgot it. And the Goyim said, I had tremendous tzar, something that I worked on, he says, for 12 weeks. And all of a sudden, finally, it did come to my mind. And it came in the middle of davening. So I took a quarter of a minute, budget, to be able to retrieve it and to keep it and to capture it. And then at the end of the davening, I lost it. Something that you already had and you lost is a tremendous tzar. He said, the tzar was so great, he said, the pain, that it took him like a half an hour after the Shemayin Esrei, on the Shchodesh, in order to calm down, in a sense, before he was able to say hello. Such a tremendous tzar he had, that he lost those seven perushim of the Zohar HaKadosh. Well, he says, I continued to daven, and now I'm davening the Shemayin Esrei of Musaf. And guess what? Lo and behold, right in the middle of Musaf, all of those seven perushim come to my mind again. But this time, as much as I was tempted, I was like dying for it, I did not break my concentration till even, he says, for a quarter of a minute. I banished it as much as I wanted it. As much as I was desperately just hoping to retrieve those perushim. But now in the middle of davening, he says, I didn't allow myself even for a quarter of a minute. And I banished it totally from my mind. I finished the Shemayin Esrei, and guess what? As soon as I finished Shemayin Esrei, I had them all. All seven perushim. So points out Reb Chaim Volozhin says, this was what the Goyim said, that min haShemayim, he taught me a lesson about the importance of tefillah. The moment that I disregarded everything and anything, even Torah, during davening, he says, I was zoiche again to retrieve those perushim that originally I had sort of defaulted slightly, and they took it away from me. But eventually, in fact, they gave it back to me. So again, this is an idea what Torah is all about. He says about the Divrei Chaim, that's on the roof. The great rabbis, the great Admoirim, tefillah was a very major part of their avodah. Tefillah, the tremendous thing, tefillah. So he said about to the Divrei Chaim, to the Sanz Ruv, this one said to him about a particular goyim, such a great goyim, that his mind is so occupied in Torah, literally, every moment of his life, that he has a great difficulty when he comes to daven. When it comes to daven, he has to force himself. It's for not to think and learning. And it was related to the Divrei Chaim that the Goyim said that it takes a tremendous effort on his part, on that Goyim. That Goyim was so connected to Torah thoughts all the time, that when it came to davening, it took a lot of effort on his part to be able to remove the thoughts of Torah during davening. The Divrei Chaim heard that, he says, I don't understand. He says, when I daven, I forget Bechlal, there is a Torah in the world. He says, that's a madrega. And the Divrei Chaim was a Goyim, tremendous Goyim. He says, I don't have that problem. He says, when I stand before a Kodesh in tefillah, I forget Bechlal that there isn't such a thing as Torah in the world. Now I'm davening. Davening is the time for davening. Of course, in Torah, is the time for Torah. It's an interesting thing just to mention that a particular Odom Choshev said that he heard from Abisa Zalman Meltzer. The Zalman Meltzer was a Talmud of Elohim, but not from Chaim, of course, from the Netziv's time. But Mr. Zalman pointed out, and he says that in the Yeshiva of Elohim, there were three categories, different types of Talmid HaChachonim, three categories of Talmidim. He says there were those who learned strictly only Be'ilim, always only in depth, which meant they covered very little, but they learned it very, very thorough. Very, very thorough, learning Be'ilim. So then there were those, he said, that would have a combination. They would learn part of the day Be'ilim, and a chelik of the day they would learn Be'kiyas, right? Collecting information, not that much depth. And then there were those who learned only Be'kiyas. So there were three categories. Those who learned only Be'ilim, those who shared the day, partially learning Be'ilim and Be'kiyas, and those, he said, only Isaac and Be'kiyas. He said like this, those that learned only Be'ilim, he said, not one real goyin came out of it. He said, those that learned both Be'kiyas and Be'ilim, many Gedolei Torah came out. And those that learned only Be'kiyas, I know of one goyin. This is the way he categorized this. You have to have both Chalokim of Torah. You have to have the Shleimus of Torah. You have to have the Iyun, the Chalok of Torah that you learn with full concentration, with the depth of meaning, with the full depth. And then the others, you have to learn, you have to cover ground also. If you're not going to cover ground, then you're going to be very limited in your knowledge, in the scope of knowledge. They have to have both. They have to have the Iyun and the Be'kiyas. So the interesting is that Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapiro, famous Rosh Yeshiva Bar Yankov, Zatzal, Yeshiva Bar Yankov, he writes in a place, he says that he heard from Rav Chonon Wasserman, Rav Chonon Wasserman heard from the Chofetz Chaim, who said in the name of Rav Shmuel Salanter, he says that the appropriate Derech HaLimud, he says, is to be Koveya, to establish two Sedorim, he says. One for Iyun, he says, and one for Be'kiyus. It's written down in the Skoma to a Sefer called Shalom Yerushalayim. It brings that this is what Rav Chonon said in the name of the Chofetz Chaim, said in the name of Rav Shmuel Salanter. All right, so we move on, Rabbi Yisai, here to the Nefesh HaChayim. And we go to, which is Perik Chof Aleph, Shar Aleph Perik Chof Aleph. And Nefesh HaChayim begins as follows. Nefesh HaChayim begins and he says, V'zoyis Torah so Odom, V'zoyis Torah so Odom, let me just make the point what the Nefesh HaChayim is trying to bring out in this paragraph. What Reb Chaim is trying to bring out in this paragraph is that it is the study of Torah that elevates and purifies completely, thoroughly, the body and the neshama of a person, and in addition also it elevates the higher worlds. That is the extreme power and far-reaching effect of one's learning Torah. This is basically in the next few lines that Reb Chaim is advancing, and then he continues further with that idea. So basically here he's trying to tell us that the study of Torah elevates the higher worlds, including purifies the neshama and the body of the person. However, Torah has to be learned appropriately. And Rav Chaim talks about Torah learning, which is the Torah lishma. You are learning Torah for the sake of Torah, not for any ulterior motive, for any personal side benefit, but you're learning Torah for the sake of Torah, for the sake of Torah Hashem, learning Torah, and he's going to tell you exactly what the appropriate purpose should be. By the way, any kind of Torah is a mitzvah, except if you're using Torah because you want to really dominate others, because you have the knowledge. That is really something which is not acceptable. But there's all kinds of ulterior motives, which are innocent ulterior motives. Really, somebody, maybe he wants to have a parnasa one day, to give a shir, maybe to be even to be a rav somewhere. These are innocent kind of shlo lishmos. But the true level of Torah is to reach madrega where you're able to learn Torah lishma for the sake of Torah. So Rav Chaim goes on to say, these are the first few words that he says. He says, "V'zoyis Torah Asiyodo." This, in fact, is the Torah of a person, Shebe'es Iskoi B'Torah Lishmo. He says, this is the result of learning Torah. Rav Chaim explains to us the result of when a person learns Torah, Shebe'es Iskoi B'Torah Lishmo. When you are learning Torah, for the sake of Torah, for its own sake, Lishmo L'Kayim K'chol HaKosuvbo. We are learning Torah in order to be able to keep all that is written in it. So now it says Rav Chaim, when a person learns Torah, for the sake of Torah to be able to keep all that is written in it, then the Torah has a purifying effect on the person. Metaher es gufoi mereshoi vadraglov. He says, then the Torah actually, it purifies the person. It purifies the person from head to toe. Ki medrashim zal, and he brings the drashim chazal. The drashim chazal in Masechtas Brachos daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara there brings down a posuk. Gemara brings down a posuk which says, Ma toivu ehelecha Yaakov. We don't have it written over here. I'm just speaking it out. Then we'll understand the Mamar Chazal that Rav Chaim is bringing in the Reb Shechaim. It says, Ma toivu ehelecha Yaakov. Which means to say, how good are your tents, Yaakov? Now, of course, Chazal explained, what do you mean the tents? What's so good about it? Ma toivu ehelecha Yaakov. This is referring to the shuls, to the Bat Knesset, the Bat Midrashos, to the places where you learn Torah, the place that you daven. Person comes into shul, you open up the sitter. Right before Adonai Olam, what do you have? Matoyvo Eholecha Yaakov. How good are your tents, Yaakov? Right, which means Klal Yisrael. Which are both the Knesset, about the Midrashes. This is the base Medrash, the base of Knesset. This is the Shul. This is the Yeshivas, the place where you learn Torah. So it says, and what's written after that? What's written after that in the Chumash, after Matoyvo Eholecha Yaakov, it says, Ke Oiholim, it says, Notoyu. It says, Kincholim Notoyu, which means to say is that they stretch out like streams. There seems to be some relationship between the tents of Yaakov, that they stretch out like streams. What is the connection between the tents of Yaakov? That they have some connection with streams. So the Gemara tells us, Loma nismuchu oyholim lenacholim. What is really the connection? What is really the connection between the tents? Why is it mentioned alongside with streams? And the Gemara tells us that ma necholim malin esodah metum letahara. In the same way that streams bring a person up from a state of uncleanness to one of cleanliness, so to the tents of Torah, so to the tents of Torah as well, a place where Torah is studied, meaning that Torah is being studied, it brings a person and it changes him from a state of guilt to a state of merit. It transforms the person totally. A stream, what it's referring to, of course, is like a mikveh. A mikveh is a place where a person who immerses himself in a mikveh, he comes out pure. Anyone who was defiled prior to going to that mikveh goes into a mikveh, now you come out pure. The Posuk compares the oiholim, the study hall, the places where you learn, you study Torah, that they have the same, potential like a stream. That mad, in the same way that the necholim, amal, they raise up a person. They raise up a person from the state of tumah to the state of tahara. If we hold him so to the tents, the places where Yidden study Torah, Malin is Odom, Mikav Choyva, Lekav Schus. Ukeinyin, Shedar, Shuzal, and similarly we find the Gemara in Eirudin, Dadal Ramad Beis, Gabetahara, Satmein, the Mikveh, regarding when people who are Tomei, they toil themselves in a Mikveh, so it says, Kol Besorei Bamayim. We know that Torah is compared to water. And how do we compare Torah to the water of a Mikveh? Mayim shekol gufay oyla behen. A mikveh has to have enough water where it's able to cover over the entire person. If a person toivels himself in a mikveh, but does not immerse himself fully, it's as if he b'chlal didn't go into it at all. It has no effect whatsoever. A mikveh only is able to effect tahara purity when you totally submerge yourself completely into that mikveh. So if toivel is compared to mayim, it means in the same way that you have totally submerged yourself in the water of a mikveh, for Torah also, to be able to reap the rewards, to be able to acquire, to absorb the benefits of Torah, you will have to immerse yourself totally into Torah. Kach divrei Torah kol gufay shalodam oyla behem. So towards regarding to Torah, a person has to, his entire body, has to be engrossed totally, he has to be engrossed in the study of Torah. And he goes on further, says Reb Chaim, we skip the brackets here, Reb Chaim says, Ukishem. And in the same way, Shekol gufoy shalodom oylo umizdachich al yidei esak ha-toyre v'amitzvus, Reb Chaim goes a step further, he says. And the same way, that the entire body of the person is uplifted, and it is cleansed, when he is engrossed in Torah, is Reb Chaim, all the higher worlds, the same vein. When you study Torah, you are also uplifting, as many, many times Reb Chaim makes the point, that the actions of man down here in this world have tremendous effect in the upper world, in the higher spheres. And therefore, says Reb Chaim, not only does your study of Torah purify your own body and your own neshama, but kako oilam is kulam, but so to all the higher worlds become elevated. Because you realize that the human beings are the heavenly counterparts. As we said many, many times, where the human being is down here on this world is the counterpart to the heavenly spheres up above. And therefore, whatever happens to the human being down here has a similar mirror effect up in Shemayim. And if the Torah, which purifies the person down here who studies Torah properly, so therefore, he says, being that man is the counterpart of the heavenly worlds, as already elaborated in Perek Vav, so heim, those worlds now, misdachechim u'mistaharim u'misalim. So therefore, all those worlds, they become purified, they become elevated, and they rise to the higher levels through the avodah of mankind. So that becomes one nekudah. This becomes one aspect that Reb Chaim is telling us. Again, this is one aspect, he says, the accomplishment of what happens is when a person learns Torah. Now, however, what Reb Chaim is continuing on to tell us is that when you talk about Torah, when you talk about learning Torah, so Reb Chaim, first of all, says there is a lofty ideal to reach when you're learning Torah. Because Torah can be learned for many, many different reasons. Some person can have various different kinds of benefits in his mind. And as we said, that also, of course, is considered learning Torah. But the ultimate study of Torah is where a person works on himself, where he elevates himself, where he learns Torah for the sake of Torah. This is Hashem's Torah, and this is the Torah that I'm learning. And therefore, Reb Chaim goes on to say, that the truth is, who is considered to be truly an upright person? Who is considered a person who is a true Oved Hashem, a true servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He says, the truly upright person does not have a mind even to elevate and cleanse his body and soul. It's an amazing thought of how far a person removes his own personal interest. The highest level of learning Torah Lishma is not even for the sake of your own body and soul to purify. In other words, you know that this is going to happen. You know that when you learn Torah, and of course, the person should try to do anything possible to purify his soul. But ultimately, in his career of Avodas Hashem, it should reach to a point where not even that should be his primary purpose. His primary purpose, a Adam Yosher, he calls him. A person who's considered to be an upright person. A person who's a true Avod Hashem. His Kavonah should not be Afilu Kedei Lali Shulitar Gufe V'Napshoi. That shouldn't be his main purpose. Ela Sheyal Etoyer Makshatli V'Kavonosoi. But rather, what should be his purpose? His purpose is, he says, his main intention is to be to exalt and to ennoble the holy higher worlds. His purpose should be, he says, Upono Lamalo, Litikin Vitaharis Oilam Itakdoshim. And Reb Chaim goes on to say, before we go further, let me explain something which is very, very fascinating. Because you have to realize, once the Torah was given, of course, so now we have all of the mitzvahs. We have all the Tariq mitzvahs, we have all of the 613 mitzvahs. Prior to the Torah was given, in the time of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, going back even earlier than that, going back to the time of Noah, going back to the time of Chanoch, going back to the earlier periods, way before Matan Torah. So you had various tzaddikim that existed at that time. And yet we find in Chazal, even though it was before Matan Torah, many, many of the great tzaddikim actually were Mekayim, the Taryag mitzvahs were Mekayim, the mitzvahs even before the Torah was given. And the way they knew those mitzvahs, the way they knew those mitzvahs, even though Torah was not given, and technically speaking, they were not commanded to do those mitzvahs. Yet they didn't. They did all those mitzvahs voluntarily. So we are told by Chazal, Mishnah Tzitzis Yumin Daf Kof Ches. And the reason is because these tzaddikim, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, their neshamas were so pure that they had a natural inclination to spirituality. In other words, it became instinctive to tap in to the resources of Torah, which we'll explain a little bit more a little bit later. But just to give a common example that Rabbi Yitzchak Bardichev in Sefer Kedushas Levi points out, in the same way that a baby is born, or even an animal, no one taught the baby how to nurse. It is part of its genetic makeup. It's a natural phenomenon. The baby just knows what to do. He knows he has to suckle his mother's breast, and this is his nourishment. It had not been taught ever. And just becomes a natural instinct before it understands anything. Same way, it's possible to have a spiritual natural instinct. But once the neshama is so highly charged that it's able to tap in what are the great things that a person is able to do, even though the Torah was not yet given. And the other HaKadoshim, with their Ruach HaKodesh that they had, based upon the Ruach HaKodesh that they had, they were able to tap in and to realize and to recognize what are the future mitzvahs going to be. What are the future mitzvahs going to be? Now, why are they doing them though? Why are they doing it? If they're not commanded to do them, why are they doing them? In other words, what comes about when they do mitzvahs so you're not commanded? If you're not commanded, it's not a mitzvah, technically. It's not commanded, it's not a mitzvah yet. So why are they doing it? So Reb Chaim tells us the following. Being that every mitzvah that a person is mekayim is not just a fulfillment of a mitzvah, but those mitzvahs, as we said, purify the world and all the upper worlds at the same time. The more pure the kiyuma mitzvah, the higher level of how you do the mitzvah. Two people can do a mitzvah at totally different levels. And therefore, the effects and the consequences of the mitzvah are often equal to the same, proportionately. The greater intent that you have in a mitzvah, the more perfect that your mitzvah, the more devotion that you have to that mitzvah, the more commitment that you have to that mitzvah, the far-reaching effects are all that much greater. And therefore, elevating those worlds and purifying those worlds as a result of your mitzvah are proportionate to how much you put into that mitzvah. The effects of a mitzvah, which Reb Chaim uses, the tikkunim, the tremendous benefits and the greater good that is brought out by a mitzvah, that existed even before the Torah was given. The only thing is, you didn't have to do it. But Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Noach, and so on, the great tzaddikim, they knew all of the tikkunim, they knew the tremendous effects, they knew and they were able to see and to recognize the tremendous effects and all of the building in the higher worlds, in the upper worlds, that the mitzvahs are able to achieve. That's why they were mekayim the mitzvahs. Because in fact, they were spiritually building blocks. Doing a mitzvah, even though there was no fulfillment of a mitzvah per se, it wasn't given yet. So there's no key in the mitzvah. But the consequences that the mitzvahs achieved, that existed even before Matan Torah, before Torah was given. And they knew about all the tremendous tikkunim in the Olam Tzol Yoinim. All the tikkunim that any mitzvah that a person does, it accomplishes, and that's why they did it. So they continuously, through their mitzvahs, built and elevated spiritual and higher worlds. This is basically in the synopsis what Reb Chaim is saying here in the next few lines. So let's take a look at it here, and we'll comment on it. So Reb Chaim goes on to say, he says, "V'zu ha'isa," the truth is, this purpose that we said, that a person should learn Torah, not for his own sake. Reb Chaim just said that the purpose that a person should learn Torah, the purpose that a person learns Torah is for the intention to exalt the holy higher world. That should be the main purpose, to elevate the higher world. Says Reb Chaim, because that purpose precisely was the only reason that Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Noach, and Chanoach, and Metushelach, and all the various tzaddikim, why were they bechlal mekayim mitzvahs before the Torah was given? This, in fact, was for the same reason. This, in fact, was the reason of the avodah shel avos v'chol ha'tzadikim rishonim. This was the reason about all the great tzaddikim, shekayim was ha'toyer v'koyim nisinoso, that were mekayim the Torah before the Torah was given. When Shadar Shurazal, as Chazal had taught us, there's a number of sources that we see that even before the Torah was given, the great tzaddikim abided through the mitzvah ha'toyer. For example, when he brought korbanos, he brought sacrifice, the Torah says, min ha'behema ha'toyerah, from the pure animals. Now, this requirement that a carbon, a sacrifice, is brought only from pure animals, that was a requirement only after the Torah was given, but not prior. Yet we find that Noach did it the right way. He did it before Matan Torah in the way it was done later. The Amru and Chazal say, matter of fact, Mikan Shulamat Noach Torah. That Noach, even before the Torah was given, he tapped into Torah, and he had the teachings of Torah. He was not formally Torah being given yet. And the Amru, similarly, we find the Gemara in Yuma, Kaim Avraham Avinu was called a Torah. Avraham Avinu was Mekayim the entire Torah. And he goes on to bring here in the brackets other sources as well. That Avraham Avinu was Mekayim called a Torah, killed all the mitzvahs before they were given. So the question is, that Avraham Avinu was Mekayim all the mitzvahs at Torah. Right? Avraham Avinu was Mekayim all the mitzvahs at Torah. Now it would seem again, what we see here from Reb Chaim Volozhin, that it's not just Avraham. He quotes Noach and all the great tzaddikim, you know, in the prior. They were Mekayim. Which means to say that they were Mekayim the mitzvahs HaTorah. Imagine, Avraham Avinu was Mekayim every mitzvah in the Torah, but you realize mitzvah Smila, he was not Mekayim until he was told. He did not mal himself. He was not Mekayim mitzvah Brit Smila until he was told. And the basic question is that all the Mepharshim ask, if Avraham Avinu was Mekayim, kol HaTorah kula. If he was Mekayim the entire Torah before the Torah was given, so why did he wait to be commanded for the mitzvah of Mila? Why was he not Mekayim mitzvah of Mila before he was mitzvah to do that? And there's many, many terutzim. The Marshot Teretz, interesting Teretz, the Marshot says, which it appears from here that Reb Chaim does not go along with that Teretz. Marshot Teretz was that Avraham Avinu, Mekayim, Kol HaTorah Kulo, was only after he was Mekayim Bris Milah. In other words, once he was Mekayim Bris Milah, so now a Bris between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was effected. It was the Kiyum of Bris Milah. So now he became Niskadish. So the Mitzvah Milah, he became sanctified. So now, after Bris Milah, now he was Mekayim Kol HaTorah before the Torah was given. But prior to Mitzvah Milah, Yitzhak was not Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kulo. Rabbi Mizrahi does not agree with that. Also, the Mishnah Melech in the Sefer Prosh Zrochim does not agree with that. And he holds that, in fact, that Avraham Avinu was Mekayim Kol HaTorah even before Mitzvah Milah. Even before Mitzvah Milah. Now, it would seem from here, because if Noach was Mekayim, Noach was not commanded to do Mitzvah Milah. Mitzvah Milah was only given by whom? Only started from Avraham Avinu. Lach Nisoi, we say, the Bezrish Avraham Avinu. So Noach didn't have the Mitzvah. Yet Reb Chaim said that Noach was Mekayim, and the Tzadikim, the Tzkuf of Noach, were Mekayim the Torah. We're also Mekayim the Torah. This seems to be not like the Marsho who said that even Avraham Avinu was not Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kulo until after the Bris, which means prior to Bris Milah, no one was Mekayim the Torah. And yet we see here Reb Chaim telling us that Noach and so on are the great people, even up to Avraham Avinu, which would be like Chanoich, Mr. Shelach, and so on, that they were Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kulo. Even Milah was not given to them. Even Milah was not given to them. They were not commanded with Milah. On the one hand, on the other hand, there's another thought over here. Remember we pointed out that Reb Chaim, and we learned it in Perek Dalet, we learned something very fascinating in Perek Dalet, and that was that man has the tremendous powers both for construction and destruction. In the same way that when a man does a mitzvah, the tremendous achievements and the tikkunim that he does in the upper world, that man effects tremendous elevation and adds a lot of kedusha to the higher worlds through his actions. By the same token, if he does an avera, he destroys worlds. Literally, he destroys higher worlds. It's like bombs exploding all over the place, wherever you're there. We said many times, you'd be able to have a screen, you'd be able to see. It's like push button, remote control. You do something down here, and thousands of miles, we talk about Shemayim, we talk about millions of miles away, you see the tremendous effects of an act, what a person does over here. And Reb Chaim told us that this power, whether for good or for bad, if you do a mitzvah, you achieve tremendous things in the positive way in Shemayim. If you do an avera, then you achieve the opposite. You destroy. You cause tremendous destruction in Churban. That power is not by all mankind. It's only by the Jewish people, he says. However, he says, all the other nations of the world, if they sin for themselves, but does not have effect in the upper world. And you might remember when we learned in Perek Dalet, Reb Chaim pointed out that even the Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar and Titus, the great Rishoyim, the greatest Averis that they did, he said, the terrible Averis that they did, but if a Jewish person sins, it's much, much greater. Why? Because if you think even of the worst Avera that we could think of, one of the things that we saw was that Titus HaRosha, the Gemara tells us, is that he brought a Zoyna, right? That he brought a Zoyna into the Beit HaMikdash and did an Avera there. Terrible, terrible thing. He was Metam of the Beit HaMikdash. But Reb Chaim says, as bad as what Titus did, that he brings a Zoyna, right? He brings a harlot right into the Beit HaMikdash, but it remains down here, the Avera. But when a Yid sins, whether B'dibur, B'maisa, even B'machshava, he allows and he generates impure thoughts in his mind. But he generates these things. This is what he says. That's far-reaching. The Beis HaMikdash Shalamato has its corresponding Beis HaMikdash in Shemaim. There's a Beis HaMikdash Lamala. So B'chaim says, when a Yid sins, he's actually bringing a Zoyin onto the Beis HaMikdash Shalamala. He's actually being Metama, the upper world, the upper spheres. That is something that no Nebuchadnezzar and no Titus HaRasha are able to do. So the question you have to ask yourselves, if you have to ask yourselves, in other words, when did the nations of the world lose their power of being able to affect and have consequences in Shemayim? Because let's understand something. Noach was not Jewish either. And we see it from Reb Chaim. Noach was Mekayim Mitzvahs. Chanoach was Mekayim Mitzvahs. Why? Because whatever they did down here, they were not Mitzvah. They were not commanded. Why are they doing it? Because whatever they do causes tikkunim. If it causes in Shemayim tremendous, tremendous benefits, tremendous positive achievement. So we see that all of mankind had that ability. All of mankind, whoever was created, as a matter of fact, you might remember Rabbi Chaim said, why is man called? The Torah says he's created with Tzelem Elokim, the form of Hashem. Tzelem Elokim. What's Tzelem Elokim mean? Tzelem Elokim means that man actually has been given dominion over the world. In a sense, he's an extension of Hashem. Just like Hashem, of course, has control of this world and the upper world, that's Hashem. He created everything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in an uncanny way, gave man that power. He created man with Tzelem Elokim to give man that authority. To give man authority to be able to have far-reaching effect, to have control in the upper world. So originally, all mankind was created with Tzelem Elokim. Noach was not Jewish either, technically. Chanoch was not Jewish. And yet they did have the power of doing things down here. And the only reason they did all those mitzvahs, Reb Chaim tells us, is because of the tikkunim elamala. So how come Nebuchadnezzar didn't have it? How come they didn't have it? When did the goyim lose it? When did the other nations of the world lose it? Which is brought down in sources from the Chidah and others. They all had it until the Deir HaPlogo. The Deir HaPlogo, again, the Tower of Bavel. They decided they're going to build a tower to go up to Shemayim. Whenever you read that passage in the Torah, it doesn't seem to make much sense. I mean, how can people even occur to them? I mean, try to build a tower. I mean, you can build a tower. 25 stories, 100 stories, assuming you build it 1,000 stories. How about 5,000 stories? How are you going to reach up to Hashem? What does it mean? The Torah tells us they're going to build a tower to reach all the way up to Hashem. What does it mean? And the explanation was the Deir HaPlogo was using the tremendous powers that's given to man, that whatever he does down here has effects in the upper world, they're going to abuse it. They're going to abuse that power by doing out there to destroy the Kedusha. And instead of exalting and building the higher worlds, to destroy. Man had that power. All man had that power. What it meant is, the figure of speech, let's build a tower in Shemayim, means let us do things down here that we have the power to have far-reaching, that we have the far-reaching ability to affect what happens in Shemayim. It was after the Deir HaPlogo that it was taken away. It was taken away. It was only reserved to the Jewish people, and only the Yidden have it, at that koyach. Noach was still before the Deir HaPlogo, and all those that were still before the Deir HaPlogo, before the Tower of Babel, they still had that koyach. It was that period, it was that point of time that they lost it. So I just want to quote you, by the way, the Chidah, as a matter of fact, the Chidah says that in one of his Mekoymes, possibly I have it over here, the Loshen of the Chidah. And the Chidah's Loshen is as follows. In his Pirish Amegilas Echo, the Chidah in his Pirish Amegilas Echo, on the Pesuk Chet Chota Yerushalayim, it says double Loshen. Chet Chota Yerushalayim, sin and she sin. What's the double Loshen? Chet Chota. So he brings down, he says, Efshar, he says, could be the meaning is, V'mashekosav Moiri Zekeni. The Chidah was a grandson of the Chesed Avraham. Azulai. The Chidah was the grandson of the Chesed Avraham. He says, my grandfather, the Chesed Avraham, wrote the Midor HaPlog of Eilach. From the time of the Dor HaPlog and on, Kishechoytim Umas Oilam, Eidam Toigimim Kiimbosa Shalahem. Black and white. From the Dor HaPlog on, that's when they lost it. From now on, nations of the world, if they sin, they're only sinning for themselves. But they don't have the far-reaching effect to cause destruction in Shemayim. Up to the Dor HaPlog. Up to the Tower of Babel, it was possible. They had that power. All of mankind. They were created in Tzelem Elokim. But from the Deir HaPlogo on, they didn't. Aval Yisrael, however, Yidden, Kibiyochel, Plagimim, Bemidus, Ol Yoinus. When Yidden do something down here and they do an Aveira, yeah, Plagim, they tarnish the upper worlds. Therefore, he says, Vizeh Shomar, this is what the Pasuk means in Echo. Chet Chotu, he says. Chet Chotu Yerushalayim. Why does it say double ocean? Tachet shol Yerushalayim means when Jewish people sin, who choshev kiflayim, it's double. Why double? Because not only they tarnish themselves, they also tarnish the upper world. The chet chotah Yerushalayim. Avalum Mesoilam, he says, but mentions of the world, shechatom, who poigim only bosa shalahem, im chaitim, they don't achieve any destruction anywhere else other for themselves, so to speak. So therefore, that is what we are talking about here. So this is the Reb Chaim. All of the great tzaddikim prior to Matan Torah, why were they doing the mitzvahs? They were not commanded. But they knew the tremendous positive effect that the mitzvahs achieve in Shemayim. They know all the spiritual building that takes place. All the spiritual building and elevation that takes place in the upper world, that's the reason that they did mitzvahs. So in effect, they were building tremendous. They were building tremendous worlds. They were exalting, they were elevating the world. Says Reb Chaim further, and we move on. And as Reb Chaim says that, again, that this was the reason that they were Mekayim the mitzvahs. So he says, Loi. He said, Loi shahayu mitzvim voisim kach mitzaradin. Do not think for one moment that that which they did because they were mitzvim mitzaradin, because they were mechuyev to do it. They were obligated to it. They were not obligated to do it. First of all, by the way, as Reb Chaim is going to tell us, you know, we have one or two basic questions against this theory, which is something that all the points talk about. In other words, on the one hand, we find that they were Mekayim all the mitzvahs before the Torah was given, and yet we find sometimes they deviated. And there's reasons for that. Here's one example. Yaakov married two sisters, Rachel and Leah. Certainly from the time of Matan Torah, from the time the Torah was given, this clearly is an Isser. Now, as Reb Chaim points out, the very fact that they made a decision, the very fact that Yaakov made a decision that he's going to marry two sisters, clearly the other mitzvahs that he did was not because he had to do it. Because if he would have to do it because he had to do it, then he would not have the right to back down or to deviate from marry two sisters. The answer is he didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to do anything. It was before Matan Torah. He was Mekayim the mitzvahs voluntarily. Because why? Because the mitzvahs voluntary bring about a certain positive effect. But guess what now? If the only reason before the Torah was given is to do the mitzvahs because of the tremendous positive effect, sometimes before the Torah was given, let's say doing something which technically would not be a mitzvah after Matan Torah, let's say there are positive effects by doing something which is against the mitzvah, but now I'm not commanded, then I would do the other thing. In other words, if my purpose is to achieve these tremendous results, and if in a certain area, before the Torah was given, if achieving a result means I have to marry two sisters, and the result was because Yaakovinu saw Baruch HaKodesh that Klal Yisrael is only going to be built through these mothers. Shem had that plan. That's not for us to figure out why Shem had that plan. But Yaakovinu, who's Neshama, as Reb Chaim says, tapped into that reality. In order to bring about the tikkunim, the tremendous tikkunim of having Klal Yisrael, the binyan of Klal Yisrael, the foundation of Klal Yisrael, is through marrying two sisters, then that becomes the greater good. In other words, doing mitzvahs before the Torah was given is not for the sake of doing a mitzvah. It wasn't really a mitzvah per se. They were not commanded. They were doing it because of the greater good that comes out of the mitzvah. So let's say greater good comes out by not doing a mitzvah. If that's the greater good, then that's what he did. But these type of calculations are only accepted before Torah was given. In other words, once you have a Torah, there's no such thing as greater good in your mind. The greater good is one thing, to do what Hashem wants you to do. That's it. You can't deviate. That's from the time Torah is given. Time Torah, in other words, the means doesn't justify the ends. That's the general rule. Greater good. It's not good if Hashem doesn't want you to do it. Before the Torah was given, in other words, technically you didn't have any mitzvahs per se. Why am I doing the mitzvahs voluntarily? All the mitzvahs. Avraham was Mekayim, Yitzchok was Mekayim, Yaakov. Why am I doing the mitzvahs? I am doing the mitzvahs before Matan Torah because of the greater good that comes out of the mitzvahs, all the tremendous tikkunim mishamayim. So if the greater good, right, would mean that sometimes not to do a particular mitzvah, then that's what he did. Because before Matan Torah, the idea was what brings about the greatest benefit that's possible for the world. So let's take a look. This is basically what Reb Chaim is saying in his few words. So Reb Chaim again, we begin again at the top of the line. Reb Chaim is saying that it is not that they had to do these mitzvahs, mitzaradin, because if they did it mitzaradin, and they did it because they had to do it, they wouldn't have left it up to their own discretion to decide when yes, when not. In other words, even though that they perceived, even if they perceived, assuming that they perceived and they discerned that according to the root of his neshama, the higher world would benefit greatly if you do a certain act. If they would have to do a mitzvah per se only, they could not deviate from that. Even if they understood, again, according to the root of their neshama, they would not be able to do that, even if they thought greater good would come out of it. If they would be mitzvah, if they felt that they had an achray, that they have to do mitzvahs, then no cheshbon would allow them, give them a license to deviate. Lahoya Yaakov Avinu Olav Hasholem Noisa Beis Achoyes couldn't marry two sisters. Lahoya Amram, what about Amram? Amram, the father of Moshe Rabbeinu, he marries his aunt. Again, with before Matan Torah, Chaz Hashem. But that had to bring about Moshe and Aaron. That union had to bring about Moshe and Aaron. Rak, the only reason there were Mekai mitzvahs before Torah was given, not mitzad adin, but mitzad hasogosom b'toyar sichlom, is because they discern. They discerned with their purity, with the purity of their seichel. He said, "Hatikunim hanoyroim." The tremendous, tremendous. He says, "Incredible tikunim hanasim b'chol mitzvah b'ha'olamis." They knew the tremendous, positive, far-reaching effects that the mitzvahs build and create. B'ha'olamis v'koyches ol yoinim tachtoinim, and it enhances the upper powers and the lower powers. And he also knew the opposite. He also discerned. He said the opposite. He also discerned the devastation and the harm that comes about by doing the opposite. They also understood and they recognized how much harm and devastation would come to the heavenly realm if they did not. That they would cause them lo yikayim. They would not be mekayim. So this is what comes out. This is what comes out. That they, so the answer is again, how is it possible that Yaakov, you know, how did he marry two sisters? He's mekayim kol ha-teru kula. What's the Nefesh HaChaim's take on it? Because there's many, many different terus into this question. If the Yovis were Mekayim Kol HaTorah before the Torah was given, the Hakam Yaakovina marries two sisters, that's against the Torah of later. Why did it deviate here? Because the only reason there were Mekayim mitzvahs prior to the Torah was given, because of the tikkunim that come out of the mitzvah. And if greater tikkunim sometimes come out by abandoning a particular mitzvah before Matan Torah, then they did the other thing. The idea was to bring about these tremendous tikkunim. But all of these calculations are only valid because the Torah was not given yet, and therefore it's up to you to see where the greater good comes out of. Is it by doing what's later going to be mitzvahs? Or maybe sometimes later it might be an avera, but now you can do it because the greater good comes out of it. More tikkunim come out of it. These cheshbonos are only shayach, are only possible, are only justified before Torah is given. Once Torah is given, by the way, there's a long shmuz from Chaim Shmulevich in Sefer Tichas Musar. He goes on to that, he says, once Torah was given, there's no such thing as making cheshbonos. Now he's trying to make calculations, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu's cheshbon, you know, a Kodesh Baruch Hu's going to come out ahead. It'll be a bigger Kiddush Hashem if I do a particular Averis. You know what, even if you're right. Even if you're right. A greater Kiddush Hashem might come out if you do a certain Averis, but you have no right to do that Averis. You have no right to do that Averis. Or someone's going to say, how about if I rob someone, right? If I rob someone in order to feed the poor. I mean, you know, like, so, again, it might be an admirable thought on the one hand. You can't do that. You can't do that. And there's no way of saying that a mitzvah is going to kasher the aver. That the mitzvah, doing later, it purifies the aver. An aver is an aver. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite. We find many times doing a mitzvah through an aver, it disqualifies the mitzvah. If somebody, let's say, would steal a lulav and an esrog and start to shake in a sukkis, right? Because the Gemara tells us it's a mitzvah of aver. So stealing an esrog, you're not yosef. And not mekayim the mitzvah. The avera that was done, this qualifies the mitzvah. And so on and so forth. So this is what Reb Chaim tells us. So all these cheshbonos, all these calculations for the greater good and so on and so forth is only before the Torah was given. So the mitzvahs that we do, why? Because of the tremendous tikkunim. But it is a particular area, sometimes, where the greater tikkunim, will come out by not doing a particular mitzvah, tzatzke by not doing it. But middle of that, what they were entitled to do at that particular time. So we conclude here. V'chei Noach. And so Noach hikri davki min abeim ha-Torah. He says, and therefore, this is also the reason. He says, Noach was makriv, we find, for the same reason Noach brought an offering after the mabul, right? After the mabul, he brings an offering only from clean animals. Only from kosher animals and kosher birds. Why? Why? Because he saw that the tikkunim from a sacrifice is only achieved if it's brought from a kosher animal. Even though it had no real bearing before Matan Torah, before Torah was given. But it's a discipline. It's a science. Look, if you put certain ingredients into something, this and this is going to come out. If you deviate from the ingredients, it's not going to work. The same thing is by any scientific formula or any situation. You have to put in the proper ingredients. So even before the Torah was given, if you want to achieve what a carbon is supposed to achieve, but you have to have the proper ingredients. And the proper ingredients, even before Torah was given, ingredients didn't change. And therefore, you have to have the Afke Behema Torah. Ki ro'o. Because Noach saw, Noach understood He understood the upper root. He understood the root. He understood the higher root of each animal. The higher root of each animal. Shokol behema v'chaya, any animal or beast. Ezer mehem koyach shor she mitaragdusha, he says, ve'ekriva. He understood which of the millions of animals around, he understood which one had a root of kedusha, and that was the animal that he sacrificed. He understood which of those animals, in fact, had, he was able to sense, which were not acceptable. Ezer mehem koyach napsho mitaratum v'asitrachra, and which come from the evil forces, so to speak, from the unclean forces, which the nishamas, the roots of those animals come from the opposite side. And therefore those animals, he did not choose to sacrifice before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because he knew they will not be accepted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, when the Torah says so many times, the Torah says the following words, when the Torah uses the Lashon, the language the Torah used to describe, that Noach followed in the ways of Hashem, it says, Chanoich, for example, followed the ways of Hashem. Or he walked with Hashem. And by Noach similarly, Es Hoelokim, his Halach Noach. Noach walked, as it were, together with Hashem. Or Hoelokim, his Halachu Avoisai Lefonos. My ancestors, they walked in the ways of Hashem, and so on. The connection between these particular people with the name Elokim, what is the name Elokim? Elokim, of course, we say means Hashem. But we know Kodesh Baruch has many different names. What is the particular Shem Elokim? What does that denote? He pointed out many times when you're davening, you find many times a Shem Hashem Yudkei Vovkei. We say Ad, right? We pronounce it Adne, right? Not saying it, you know. And then there's Elokim. When you say in the davening Baruch Ato Hashem, and it's written Yudkei Vovkei. That's why Shem Hashem is written. You're supposed to have in mind the Shulchan Aruch tells us Hoye Hoye Veviyeh. Yudkei Vovkei means Hoye Hashem was, He is, and will be. That is the basic thing that you think about when you see Hashem's name written in those words. Baruch Ato Hashem, Yudkei Vovkei, that's made up of sort of like a composite of Hoye Hoye Veviyeh. When you see the Shem Elokim, right, Elokim means the all-powerful. That's what you have in mind. Because that is the context, in what context that particular name is being pronounced, or being brought out. So it says, Reb Chaim, Sheperish Elokim, because the meaning of the word Elokim means Bala Kleches Pulam. Elokim means the one who is all-powerful. Hainu, it means, and therefore, if Elokim is the all-powerful, so when it says, Et Elokim is Halach Noach, you know what that means? Noach also understood. Noach understood which actions are the all-powerful. Which actions of a human being are so far-reaching, that are so all-powerful in the positive way, and which of my actions are all-powerful in a destructive way. That's what it means. Et Elokim is Halach Noach. Noach knew and understood what the Shem Elokim is all about. The Shem Elokim means Balakoich is Kulam. The Shem Elokim means the all-powerful. Hainu shehesigu, these people, Noach, Chanoich, and so on. They perceived, and they understood, and they discerned. In yonei ha-koiches wal yonim tachtoinim. They understood what's involved in the upper powers and the lower powers. The chukei shamayim v'aretz u'mishtarim. They understood the disciplines of heaven and earth. The sidra hanagosom. And understood the way that these things are guided. Viskashrusom. They hear kavosom al yedei kol inyonim ma'asodom, and their connections to everything that man does. They knew it. Imagine if someone would go and study it, you'd be told exactly if you do this, this and this happens. They knew it. They knew it exactly, the relationship between their actions and to what happens to all the forces of the world, in a positive way or in a negative way. Al pi seder vinyan zeh, and based upon that knowledge, knowing how everything is affected in one way or another, that's the kind of life they led. They led the kind of life based upon understanding which is going to achieve positive effects, positive results, or the opposite. The Yinzeh, based upon that Seder in Yinzeh, where you call Echad Mehem Mishalech, and Misnag Becholin Yonos. Fishiro, Vihisik, Hatikunim, Wal Yoinim, Fishoyish Shmosoi. Based upon understanding, you know, each person is their own person. Each person has a different Shoyish Neshama, he has a different root of his Neshama. However, based upon understanding what their mission in life is, what their powers is, they led their lives in that way to be able to achieve the maximum that Hashem endowed them, their neshama, to be able to achieve and to be able to accomplish. This is a nutshell here. Again, we have the tremendous knowledge of how great this is, the effects of man. We'll do one little piece, Rabbi. Our time is almost up, really. So just take a look at the sheet just for one moment. This is really one moment. really hardly any time left here. And I think what we should do is here maybe number four, very quickly. Turn the sheet on the side. It's from the Sefer Brachat HaBachaim. Let me just make a little hagdomah. The Medrash tells us that before HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah, by the way, we're up to Shavuos almost, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Klal Yisrael, he actually offered it to many of the nations of the world, and they all rejected it. They all rejected it. And you realize the reason they rejected it, because they asked, give me the sampling. He wanted a sampling of what's written in the Torah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the sampling, you know, each nation against what runs against their grain. For example, as we have right here. Hine b'sefri parshas zos habracha Issa. The free tells us, Kishenigla Hamokah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself, didn't tell Israel, Loyal Yisrael, Bothad Honigla, HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only revealed himself to the Jewish people, El Al Kol Ois, to all the nations, Betchila Holach Esau B'nei Esau, he went to the people of Esau, Vomalem, he asked them the question, listen, I'm offering you the Torah, Mekabli Matem, it's a Torah, are you willing to accept the Torah? Omer Elohi, so the people of Esau said, Maksim, but it's a written Torah. Don't commit murder. Now that was Mamish against the grain of Esav. Esav was murder. That's what he stands for. When Esav heard that the Torah had Leshirsach, he says, I don't need that kind of a Torah. So Esav answered, listen, the sons of Esav said, our father, his whole life was based upon murder. His whole existence. He says, Roteyachu, he's a murderer. Shinemar, by your dying in the Esav. As we find that Yitzchak Avinu says, the hands of Esav are hands that murder. As a matter of fact, Yitzchak even promised Esav, Shenemar v'chavur, you're living by the sword. That's going to be your fate. Your fate is living by the sword. So the Bnei Esav said, how can we accept the Torah that said Leshirtzach? Our whole entity, our whole being is, our life is based upon Ritzichim, murder. Okay, we can't accept the Torah. We go further. Holoch Esav b'nei Amoin, Umoyov. He goes to the people of Amon and Umoyov. Amalei mekalam matam satayr. On the Lord, so they also say, we want a sample. Maxi was in the Torah, but then he said something else. What does it say? He said, Loisinov, right? Not to commit adultery. He says, our whole being is from a behavior, right? From incestual behavior. How was Amon and Moab born? With the daughters of Lot, right? Daughters of Lot who became pregnant from their father, and so on. Then we go a little further, go down further. They come to the Bnei Yishmael. How was that Torah? You want to receive the Torah? So they said, Maksiba, so they told the Bnei Yishmael, we're told, you can't steal, you can't rob. What do you mean we can't rob? Our father Yishmael, Listimoyer, he was a robber. The Torah says, he'll be a Perodom. He'll be a Perodom, be a wild human being, and so on and so forth. Doing things, doing things in an uncivilized way. You notice, all of these samplings are one of the seven mitzvahs that a goy has to do anyway. They have no choice. So what does it mean? These nations of the world said, we don't want to accept the Torah because of these mitzvahs. We don't want Leisirtzach. Guess what? Leisirtzach you're going to have to do anyway. Keep it. Leisignoy, you have to keep it anyway. I would assume if you tell a goy about Shabbos, maybe. I can't keep Shabbos because nations of the world don't have to keep Shabbos. Tell them about kosher. No, I don't have to. But those samples that they were given, they have no choice anyway. So it's happening one of the seven mitzvahs of the Noachide laws, right? The Shemitz Bnei Noach, that they have to keep. So what does it mean we don't want to keep those mitzvahs? We don't want the Torah because of those mitzvahs. According to Nefesh HaChaim, we understand very clearly what they meant. Let's take a look. Go to the left side. V'lefi Hambur. Let's move on to the next paragraph. V'lefi Hambur b'divar Rabbeinu Kan. Based upon what the Nefesh HaChaim says, Nuch Halavai Bodeh. Then he should nitzavu mitzvahim design mitzvahs Bnei Noach. It's true that the Umat Olam, that the nations of the world are commanded. They have no choice. They're commanded to keep seven mitzvahs. Among them, don't murder, don't rob, don't steal, so on. Avol mikol mokoy, madreges maseyem. But the extent of their actions, v'pchine shefeile hi she'ein maseyem poyalim hirud v'olomos. But when a goy deviates, and he does commit murder, it's murder down here. It does not have a far-reaching effect in Shemayim. It does not destroy upper worlds. When a goy commits adultery, it's an avera down here. It does not affect the upper world. Had they accepted those mitzvahs by accepting the Torah, then they would have had not only the avera down here, that same action would have far-reaching effects that they did not want. So he points out here, this is a crisis, because you're held accountable. the greater the destruction that you cause, the holding accountable, holding, you're being held to a higher standard now. So he points out like this. The Madregas Maseim was a Bechinish follow, was a very low Madregas, Ein Maseim Poyalim, here is Boilim. Their actions don't cause destruction in the upper world. Because Baruch Hu asked him, Imreitim Lekabla Torah. You know what it meant? You want to be Mekabal Torah. Included in that acceptance would mean Shekabu Alem lehis alloys from Madragotam, that they would rise from their level at Shekol Maseim, that whatever they do from now on, Yiskashru Be'olam Esol Yoinim, it would have connection to the upper world. Live nice, either to build or the Haris Chaz Vishon. Shefi Madragas B'nai Yisrael Shekabu Tatar, which in fact that's what happened to Yidin. That's what happened with Yidin when Mekabal Torah, that whatever they do has far reaching effects. If the Goyim would have been Mekabal Torah, would have received the Torah. That from now on, whatever they do, would now have consequences, not only to themselves, but have consequences to the upper world as well. The oil there, to have that responsibility, that whatever I do down here has far-reaching effects in the upper world, sirvu umis lekabel, that they refuse to be mekabel. Because they knew they have a tithe, they knew that they have to steal. They knew that they are going to commit these atrocities. At least that our responsibility only be limited to ourselves, not the greater. Kim Shitavosam, their type of desire is Legeza Luznusa Kadoima. The Yodu, they knew Shim Yikabu Satoira, that if they will be Mikabu Satoira, the Iskashu Nishmoisayim and their Nisham has now become bound. But Ilomus Ol Yoinim connected to the upper world, was Gamlo Yekvul Yoinshim. There will be no limit to the punishments as well, because the greater you destroy, the greater the punishment later. Shikabu Abra Chatoayim. Lachain Sivum Likabu, Ubachru Lihishar, therefore they decided it's better to remain the Madrega of Bnei Noach. In the Madrega of Bnei Noach, yes. We have to keep this Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach, but it's a limited responsibility. Whatever we do is only a kilkul, is only again, destruction to ourselves, but punishing for ourselves, but at least it's not so far-reaching. So of course, the level of punishment, the level of responsibility is also much, much less. So again, I guess the more we understand the achrayus and the extent of our actions, it gives us a little bit of a motivation to think twice before we act, think twice before we do something, and even things that we think about, to try to keep it as pure as possible. In such a case, we will be building higher worlds, elevating worlds, and elevating ourselves, and come closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's truly what every Yid wants to do.